Welcome to the Transition Bridge Podcast, the podcast that will help you embrace, grow, and be transformed by the transitions of life. Now here's your host, Debbie Ronka.
Welcome to the Transition Bridge Podcast. I'm Debbie Ronka, your host, and today we're going to cover the topic of perfectionism. You know, I believe this is an important topic for us to cover. You know, a lot of us live our lives through the lens of perfectionism, and we don't even realize it. We may not even be aware of how it's affecting our everyday lives, or even our relationships, and ultimately the calling that we have in life. There's a quote that I found from Marie Forleo, and it says, "Perfectionism, at its core, isn't about high standards. It's about fear. Fear of failure, fear of making a mistake, fear of being judged, criticized, or ridiculed." And you know, we talk about transitions on this podcast, so especially in times of transition, there's decisions that really need to be made. And if we have perfectionism operating in our life, we can tend to even procrastinate. Like, that would be one of the symptoms of perfectionism. And when we procrastinate, we're not going to make the decisions that need to be made, especially in times of transition. You know, we may become fearful of the unknown. And as a result, we can actually paralyze ourselves and feel like unless something is perfect, unless something is just so, we can't move forward. And we're just going to keep ourselves in that cycle of being stuck. Perfectionism just affects us in so many ways. And that's why I am so excited to have our guest, Valerie Cantello, with us today. Valerie would share with you, "I am a recovering perfectionist, a multi-passionate professional, mother, wife, mental health advocate, and author of Off Script, A Mom's Journey Through Adoption, A Husband's Alcoholism, and Special Needs Parenting." In my book, I share about my journey as a mother of teens with mental health issues, the struggles of special needs parenting, the effects of alcoholism on a marriage, and how I found my authentic self through all of the challenges. I use my experiences to inspire those whose life has gone off script and are looking to reframe the narrative. Valerie, welcome to the Transition Bridge Podcast. Thank you for being here today to share your story about how now you call yourself a recovering perfectionist.
Yes. Well, Debbie, thank you so much for having me. And I love that you started with a Marie Forleo quote, because I think she's an amazing woman that's helping to teach us about life's transitions as well. And I really love your podcast and how you focus on how we can remove the fear from the transitions that we experience in life and move forward. So thank you for having me.
Well, I know this is really going to be an intentional podcast. I think we're going to learn so much from your story. So let me ask you, when did you first even understand that you were a perfectionist? Was this something that you recognized about yourself in childhood? Was it something that you became aware of later in life? Tell us your story.
Well, so I have the blessing of growing up in an amazing family, mom and dad and brother in Illinois. And I was the oldest child. My brother's just a year and a half younger than me. But I really liked to be responsible and organized, and my dolls were lined up, my books were alphabetized, and my room was always orderly. And my brother loved to come in and mess it up just to annoy me, because it, you know, I liked everything orderly. And I think those were really the early seeds of perfectionism, but I really found it blossomed when I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at the age of 10. Because everything that you are told is, if you don't take care of your blood sugars and carefully monitor your food and exercise, that you can have life-threatening complications. And so whatever whatever I had in me before that diagnosis just really blossomed with that diagnosis. And so I was really, it was a really heavy thing to be at 10. And so the lightness of childhood kind of evaporated after that. And everything became much more rigid. And as I went through my life, I tried to control, and I really see control aligning well with perfectionism as a symptom. And I had to, excuse me, control everything about my diabetes. I would track numbers and food and carbs and exercise and stress. And because that was a standard that was not achievable, I would lie to my doctor about my numbers. And that's how I rebelled as a high schooler. And then perfection did serve me well because I was very high performing at school. And then later in my career, I wanted to get things right. And I was the go-to person for anything that needed to get done. But as I got into my adulthood, I started to find perfectionism really was taking its toll. And as I write about in the book, my husband and I adopted a special needs daughter from Russia, and we did not know of the great challenges we had ahead. And her needs were much greater than we ever anticipated. She ended up having autism and reactive attachment disorder and bipolar disorder and a cornucopia of diagnoses that in my white picket fence dream of life were never part of the script. And these were none of these things were things I could control. And so my perfectionist mentality would do endless amounts of research and spend hours and hours just trying to find the solution to a problem that really didn't have a clear-cut solution. As that happened, I really felt my worth and my self-confidence decrease because I'm pushing this boulder up a hill that I can't make progress on. And so, of course, the way a perfectionist, or at least my perfectionist approach, was that there's something wrong with me. It was my fault, and I should have been doing it better.
Do you think that was, like I was thinking of your birth order, do you think any of that has to do with the fact that you were the firstborn, that you take on all of this responsibility?
I definitely think a birth order does play a part of it, because I was definitely very responsible. You know, I would ride my bike to the library as a kid, and I would never have a book that was overdue. And then there was my brother, who was very free-spirited and fun and lively and didn't share those same kind of tendencies that I did.
So just saying that about your brother, just because it sounds to me like in that household, you know, I grew up with six brothers. So I know. And so I can imagine, you know, here you had everything in order in your room and you were at peace in a way.
Yes.
When everything was in order. And then your brother just runs in and messes it all up. Of course, brothers do things because they know it upsets us. It's just being a brother, right? But as you got older, like how you just described him being so free-spirited, he seemed happy-go-lucky. So was that also a contrast in your personality? Like not the perfectionism of your tasks was one thing, but your personality, were you happy-go-lucky? Were you always anxious or stressed inside?
It's interesting because I would never describe myself as happy-go-lucky. So we are two very different people. My brother is definitely an outdoor person. I was an indoor person as a kid. If I could read books all day or, you know, play school with my bears, that was my happy and safe place. My mom actually had to tell me to go outside and tell my brother to come inside. So we're very different personalities. And I was really envious of his lightness. And I think I was probably a lot more happy-go-lucky before the diabetes diagnosis. But after the diabetes diagnosis, you have to always plan ahead when you're a diabetic. You have to have food and insulin. And there are just so many factors that go into living with diabetes. And Thankfully, because I've had it for over 40 years, it's kind of like I don't even have to think about it anymore. But as a kid, my parents were definitely concerned. They wanted me to have a healthy, fulfilled life. I think they also were a little more cautious than me with my brother.
That would make sense. And like with your diabetes, do you think, because I know like perfectionists are task oriented, do you think this added fear to you because it was more medical and more unknown? Like maybe you had to study about it. It wasn't just your dolls and your clothes and your books anymore. It was something you really couldn't see. So did that really exasperate your perfectionism?
It really did as an adult when I got older because I started tracking every detail and I was trying to find the patterns and a little bit obsessive about it. And that was reflected not just in my diabetes, but in my household with my husband, with my daughter and all of her special needs and just the feeling of being out of control of that situation. I used to control other things. Like I would organize my silverware drawer, even though it didn't need to be organized. I would go around my house with the magic eraser and take off any spot I could see. And one of my friends used to say, you could have an open house at your house any day with 1 hour's notice because it's so organized and clean. And I always took that as a compliment, but now I see it as, wow, I was really hyper obsessed about how everything had to be in its place. And I felt like at least I can control my environment if I can't control my daughter's situation. And at the same time, my husband was an alcoholic, although I never used those words for the majority of our 19 years of our marriage. But living with alcoholism in a family also, I believe, exacerbates perfection because as the person, the codependent that's married to the alcoholic, I felt like if I could control everything and everything could be perfect, there would be nothing that he could be stressed about or mad about, and it would remove his reason to drink. And that was such foolish thinking. I was so naive. I didn't know anything about alcoholism, but you can just see this trajectory of me taking this all on. And if I can be perfect and I can create this environment, then life will be good and easy. And if I can't, it's my fault and I'm not perfect.
Gosh, that's almost like a two-edged sword there. You're yeah. wanting to control and yet it's still coming back at the same time. And that is a big part of perfectionism, the control. So it's easier to control yourself, but then when you're in these situations, like you said, the alcoholism and your daughter, things you could not control, you wanted more control just to bring yourself peace. Is that the kind of cycle that
yes,
it is?
Yes, it was definitely that cycle. And it wasn't until I got out of that marriage and got into some 12-step recovery on my own that I realized you can only control what's in your hula hoop. And there were so many things that I was trying to control that were outside of my hula hoop. And there was such a freedom once I realized I didn't have to be in control of everything and I didn't have to be perfect. And perfection wasn't really serving me. I was not living a life that I really wanted.
I love that. I could only control what is in my hula hoop. Boy, that's, you know, boundaries right there.
Totally.
I love that because, gosh, if we don't have some kind of boundary with us, with how we allow others to treat us or just boundaries on how we use our time. But here you are with the whole visual of the hula hoop. Like I can just see that around me. And it's like, okay, what's inside my hula hoop that I can control? Anything outside of it, like don't touch it, like don't go there. Mm-hmm. Gosh, was that hard to retrain your way of thinking?
It was really hard, but it was such a process and much of it was precipitated by the fact that I ended up divorcing that husband. At this time, my son was experimenting and using drugs, which really crushed me. But that time period in my life, I just realized I need to change my mindset, and I really need to focus on me. I need to understand who I am. I had been married for 19 years, and my whole identity had been that which I started the marriage with right after college. I needed to figure out what really brought me joy, and what did I want to do with my life, and how could I be contributing, and what did I want my core values to reflect, or my life to reflect through my core values. And so it was, even though I didn't think at the time divorce and going through the situation with my son, on top of the situation with my daughter, I didn't think that was a great transition. I wasn't excited about it, but it turned out to be the best transition in my life, because I got to the point where I discovered who I really was. I learned that perfectionism wasn't the goal. I understood, and people told me back in the day, when you were a perfectionist, you were so intimidating. I was afraid to talk to you because you had it all together. You'd come into the office, or you'd come into a meeting, and you had it all together. And the sad thing for me, looking back on that time, is I thought I was helping people because I had it all together. And so I could organize things, and I could plan meetings, and I could speak. And really, I was really blocking people from wanting to talk to me because I wasn't being authentic, and they couldn't see that imperfection was okay.
You know, that is the interesting part about perfection. Like, let me ask you this. Did you find yourself, well, I want to go back to what you just said. It's so true. When you feel like you can't be vulnerable with another person, like if you feel like, oh my gosh, if I make a mistake in front of you, you may see me as less. And so I could see how that could hinder relationships. So were you aware that maybe you looked for perfection in other people, like you wanted them to act a certain way, or was that not part of who you were?
Well, I wanted people to live up to a standard, but I also recognized that I held a really high standard that I didn't want to put on anyone else. So like with my kids, I never said to my son, you need to get straight A's, you need to play soccer. You know, I never told him this is what I expected from him, but both his dad and I are very type A, high performing people. And so by osmosis, he got that message, intended or not. And it's been really fun, actually, through the last couple of years, he's 24 now, to talk to him about that and apologize to him for the way that I set this standard and this model of perfection, and everything had to go so well. And he sees a huge transformation in me by being authentic and real and having these deep conversations and saying this is hard. And when he was a kid, I thought I was protecting him by not saying those things, but I was really setting up this unsustainable standard of everything has to go well or something's wrong with you.
That's really insightful. That's one of those things for me to sit here and ponder about for a minute. It's amazing that, you know, we realize these things later, but at the time we think we're doing good, we're serving well. And it's that realization later on. I love that you shared that, because I know that's going to help a lot of moms and dads, you know, as they're raising their kids. Let me ask you this question. How is it? I know one of the goals, I guess, in perfectionism is excellence, but yet striving for excellence is good. So how does that get convoluted with a perfectionist type personality? Like, you want things to be excellent, but how does that in a way distort excellence?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I actually have an example from this weekend. So in my professional work, I'm a consultant and I do communications and public affairs and marketing. And I was sending out a press release for a client this weekend and I accidentally sent the wrong version. And the version that got sent out was excellent, but it had some changes that the client had made that I hadn't seen. And so he texted me and said, "I'm really disappointed that you didn't send out the most recent version." And of course, I immediately go into, "Oh my gosh, oh, I felt so bad because I want to be excellent at what I do." But I called him and I just said, "Oh, I'm really sorry. You know, here's how I can fix it." And he was so gracious and he said, "No, it was my fault, blah, blah, blah." But the difference in my life now versus my life maybe 7 years ago is that I didn't obsess about it all weekend. Mm. And I didn't say, "You, Valerie, you're a bad person because you sent out the wrong press release." It was a simple error of version control. And I used to say to my first husband, who was always stressed, I said, "Is anyone going to die today because of this situation?" And the answer 100% of the time was no, because I was trying to, you know, get him to not be so stressed. But I often ask myself that now, is anyone going to die today? Is this going to matter in a week? Is this substantively something that I need to be worried about? And does this reflect, I know my intentions were good, and so do I need to be worried or be thinking about this? How much of my peace and serenity am I giving up for this thing or this thought? And, you know, I'm a recovering perfectionist. I'm not 100% recovered, but I do notice that my time span where I beat myself up or I think about something has decreased significantly over the past years.
Well, I celebrate that because that's a huge victory. A huge victory, Valerie. You know, that is the problem with perfectionism, isn't it? Because it's beyond the task. It's like what you just shared. We make it about us and we devalue us. Like we think we're bad, we're not good. And it becomes so personal. I guess that's the effect of the perfectionism. And so being able to divide and separate that from yourself, that it's a task, it's not me, it's not my core values, it's not really who I am. I'm a good person, I'm kind. Like I could see that that would really be a journey, a process of separating that out. And I love the fact that you seem to have like questions that you just ask yourself in a given moment. You know, will this affect this person? You know, will someone die over this? Like you seem to have a process that you take yourself through. So I celebrate that. And yes, recovering. We're all recovering from something, aren't we? And the whole idea is for each of us to get stronger in whatever area in life that we struggle in. And as long as we're moving forward and growing, there's victory in that. And, you know, sometimes it'll be a continued process, you know, for the rest of our life, but we're getting better. We can look back and see how far we've come. So Valerie, earlier you shared about a 12-step process. Can you help our audience that's listening in with some of those steps, whatever you think would be the best to learn, however you would like to share? Because I would love to, and I know this would be your heart as well, to equip and empower some of the people that struggle with perfectionism and what we can learn from you.
Sure. So I actually don't have a 12-step process. I was involved in a 12-step program. I attend Al-Anon, which is a great program for anyone who's in a relationship or has someone in their life that is using alcohol or drugs. And that's a wonderful process. But part of how I got to the recovery point is first I had to acknowledge that I had a problem. You know, my problem was control and perfection. And I realized my ego was really driving that, which shocked me because at the core, I want to be a good person. I don't know if you know the Enneagram, but I'm an Enneagram 1 and I am very motivated by being good. And so to actually acknowledge, Valerie, you have wrapped yourself up in your ego in this perfectionism. And if you really want to be the person that you say you are, you need to get rid of some of that ego about having everything go right all the time. I did a lot of reading in my journey. I read The Gifts of Imperfection by Brené Brown, listened to thousands of podcasts, did a lot of journaling about breaking down what was I trying to achieve with perfection. And I find gratitude for sure and journaling really are ongoing, almost daily strategies for me to not be perfect and not seek that as the goal. And of course, now I have this amazing, wonderful whole life that I didn't have before. So it's almost like it's a clear sign to me that recovering from perfection is what I want to do. So some of the funny things that I've realized since I've been a recovering perfectionist is that I'm willing to try new things, even if I'm not going to be good at them. And that's not I have to give an asterisk there. That's not a negative mindset, but I would have never tried anything before that I wasn't pretty sure I was going to be good at. So I do high intensity interval training and I am not an athlete, but hey, I love it. I love the people in my program. I wrote a book, which was something I always thought I would do, but that's pretty scary and intimidating process. And I also learned how to watercolor paint, and I'm never going to be the next artist on the cover of some wonderful art magazine, but it's super enjoyable and it really allows me just to enjoy life. I've also learned that I'm a little bit more balanced introvert extrovert. And I was thinking about it this weekend that I think the reason I always tested so high introvert was because I was fearful of anyone seeing my imperfect self. And so I wouldn't put myself in places where I could perceive someone was judging me. And I think COVID really showed me that I really get a lot of energy from being with people and having authentic one-on-one conversations, but I would have never been given that gift of knowing that about myself without shedding the perfection. And so now if people are judging me, those are not my people. I'm not going to hang out with people that judge my outfit or my weight or whatever, but I'm so glad I learned that about myself. And it also reminds us that we can change. We have permission to be different than we always have been. And I don't think I ever knew that about adulting when I was a young person.
I love that. We need to give ourselves permission first to make mistakes, because if we don't give ourselves permission to make mistakes, we're not going to experience new things. We're not going to grow. I think Albert Einstein said something to that effect. Like, if I've never met anyone who like didn't make a mistake, they never tried anything new. And so I think our lives could be shallow and we don't even realize it, right? Mm-hmm. So just experiencing something new just allows that growth. Otherwise we plateau, right? Don't you agree?
Right. Absolutely.
And I think with the transition, I could see where perfectionism could really impede new experiences. You know, I always talk about transitions as being the bridges in life that take you from where you currently are to the next season or direction. And as you cross that bridge, you know, what I call the messy middle where you get in, mm-hmm. there where a lot of decisions need to be made. I could see where these fears, these insecurities that are rooted in perfectionism or the opposite way can prevent someone from moving forward because the unknown is too overwhelming. Because it maybe they don't feel like they have control of it, or maybe they don't feel like they'll do well in there, and they want to do so excellent that their perfectionism keeps them from moving forward. And how important it is to become aware. So let me ask you, you said you became aware that you were a perfectionist. Was that from other people's conversations, or was this just in a like aha moment for yourself?
It was really an aha moment after my divorce, because probably for about 10 or 15 years, I was just focused on trying to parent my special needs daughter, which was a very challenging task. Live with my husband, who is actively an alcoholic, be a decent parent to my son, and have a job. And so I had shut down my feelings. I had no idea really, truly how I felt about everything. And I called myself the Teflon mom, because I was just going to produce and I was going to get stuff done, because that was so much easier than feeling and experiencing emotion. But when I found myself in this place, newly divorced, my daughter is in a residential treatment out of state. My son is finishing high school. And I finally had time on my hands to actually think about myself. And it felt so selfish. And I want to say to anyone that is thinking that themselves, it's not selfish to do self-care. It's not selfish to discover who you are. I am a much better human now that I know these things about myself, and I can contribute so much more to my family and to my life and my society by knowing that perfection isn't the answer, and by being authentic. And so it was a real, even though it was one of the darkest times in my life, just kind of clawing my way out of the marriage that I had, and wondering, being a little bit fearful about the future. I call it the cave of getting divorced and feeling the heaviness of trying to figure everything out. But then about 6 months later, I came out of my cave and I was ready to go and experience life and find, embracing the unknown and trying to find out who I was and who I would be in the world.
I'm so glad that you did that, because I've just been so inspired listening to you today. It's an incredible journey, one that I know that was not easy. And I just keep putting myself in your home with all that you were dealing with between your daughter and your husband. That had to be one of the most difficult times in your life. And here you are being able to help us know that there's hope, that there is something on the other side of your life if you would just take the time to listen to your own heart, to look at maybe your own patterns in life, to discover who we all are. You happened to mention not being an artist. So I have this quote here from Salvador Dali, and he says, "Have no fear of perfection. You will never reach it." And isn't that amazing? And I'm sure there were times in your life, no matter how much you did, like, perfection does elude us, because it's always going to move. It's always, we don't arrive, we don't embrace it fully. So Valerie, I would love for you to just speak to our audience from your heart. If you had the opportunity to just sit in front of a room filled with men, women, teenagers that feel like, gosh, I think I'm struggling with perfectionism. I have some of these tendencies. I feel like I have to run the universe, or I'm always needing approval. I'm being driven beyond what is normal. I'm starting to be aware of these things. What would you say to them right now?
I would say, it's okay. I've been there. You can recover and have an amazing life without holding yourself to this unattainable standard, which has probably caused you so much stress and loss of sleep and limited your life in ways that you have no idea. And I would love to read this quote from Karen Casey that says, "Joy and sorrow are analogous to the ebb and flow of the ocean tide. They are natural rhythms, and we are mellowed by their presence when we accept them as necessary to our very existence. Any pain today guarantees an equal amount of pleasure if I willingly accept them both." And the reason I share that quote is I find so much peace and serenity in it, because it acknowledges that life isn't a straight line, that we're trying to stay on the path to perfection, but just that there are ups and downs and that we can go through them. And it's the natural rhythm of life. And that's something I never knew as a kid. I thought life was always supposed to be neutral or good. And I thought anytime that it wasn't those things, there was something wrong with me. And I really attribute that to my seeds of perfectionism. And then the other thing I'd like to say is that there is an amazing book by James Clear called Atomic Habits. And in it, he talks about getting 1% better. So when you think about recovering from perfection, it doesn't mean that you're giving up on great work and being good at what you do. It just means you're allowing yourself to be human. And so I love the idea of getting 1% better, because 1% is attainable, but expecting yourself to be 100% perfect all the time is not.
Can I just stand up and give you a standing ovation? Oh, and I love that book, Atomic Habits. I'm so glad that you recommended that. And Valerie, you have a book, Off Script. How can, tell us a little bit about your book and how people can find it.
So my book, Off Script, Off Script, A Mom's Journey Through Adoption, A Husband's Alcoholism, and Special Needs Parenting, is the memoir of my life as I experienced all those things. And it addresses a lot of different topics, including perfectionism. And you can find it online at most online retailers, but the ebook and print book are available at Amazon. Go to tinyurl.com/buyoffscript. I'd love it if you followed me on Instagram, Valerie J. Cantella, C-A-N-T-E-L-L-A. And then I have a website, valeriecantella.com. I do publish a monthly blog post and talk about different topics, offer resources there. And just even in this conversation, I'm thinking that I need to put a resources for recovering perfectionist list up there with some of the podcasts and books that I found helpful. And just reach out. I love to talk to people. I love to help move them along on their journey. And so let's chat.
I highly encourage everyone who's listening to connect with Valerie. She really, truly has a heart to help. She's been there. She understands. And she'll be able to give you great ideas to implement your journey to walk out of perfectionism. And like she said, it's all about taking steps at a time. You know, maybe it's one task at a time, one step at a time, one new thought that you can, you know, interject into the way you live that will help you unravel the perfectionism. Because all of you that are listening, you have a divine purpose. You have a high calling on your life. And sometimes this perfectionism can impede us from being all we can be in this life. You're so valued. You're so needed. You are good. You are lovely. You are powerful. There's so much about you that maybe you still need to discover. So I highly recommend that you reach out to Valerie. I just see her as being a light in this world, being able to give you the information that you need. And I can't thank you enough, Valerie, for being with us today. You truly have just brought so much wisdom, knowledge, and understanding on this topic of perfectionism. Thank you for your time And again, everyone, please reach out to Valerie. I'm going to actually have her come back on in the fall. She has so many powerful stories to share with us. So look for Valerie again. Follow her on Instagram and reach out. And thank you for being with us today as we all come together as a village to grow, embrace, and be transformed by the purpose and power of transition.
Thank you for joining us today on the Transition Bridge podcast. We appreciate you. If you enjoyed listening today, please go ahead and subscribe or review the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to check out the show notes. And for more information about Debbie, go to DebbieRonca.com. That's DebbieRonca.com.